This is the 21st Show. I'm Christine Herman. Throughout the hour, we've been talking about algae blooms, how they've impacted communities across Illinois, what makes them dangerous. But there's, of course, other ways our drinking water can be tainted or deemed unsafe for drinking. And so for the rest of the hour today, we're going to be looking at the state of drinking water across Illinois and learn about resources for learning about water quality. We're joined by Tasha Stoiber, senior scientist for the Environmental Working Group, a nonpartisan organization that looks to reform environmental, chemical, and agricultural laws. Tasha, welcome to the 21st Show. Thanks for being here.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
So let's talk big picture in a general sense. What makes for a good source of drinking water?
Yeah, that's a good place to start. And when people think about their drinking water, they turn on the tap and they might think, my tap water is the same regardless of where I am. But that's just not the case. Your location actually determines a lot about the quality of your water. So in the state of Illinois, if we're looking at the population, about 75% of the population gets their drinking water from surface water sources. And about 25% from groundwater sources. But if we're looking at just the number of utilities, it's about 50-50. So that means that smaller utilities often rely on groundwater sources for their drinking water.
When we say groundwater, we mean like well water. Surface water would be like lakes.
Yeah.
And aquifers.
Thanks for that clarification. So surface water would be, as the previous guest mentioned, they rely on lakes for their drinking water source. So that would be surface water, lakes, streams, rivers, things like that. And groundwater would be, groundwater that's pumped up from an underground aquifer. So you're going to have different sets of contamination issues with those two different water sources.
And then I imagine that means also the way the water is treated in different parts of the state depends on the source of the water and what they're trying to treat it for. Is that right?
Yes, treatment will depend on a lot of different things. The water chemistry, the existing contaminants, a lot of different factors will go into that. So when we're talking about surface water, of course, and what's often an issue in the summertime, and this was related to the algal bloom issue, is that in the summertime, sometimes you have this extra organic material, such as dead algae, which can result, or other plant material, agricultural runoff, things like that. It can get in the drinking water and mix with drinking water disinfectants and produce disinfection byproducts, which can be harmful in high levels. So that is an issue in surface water sources, especially in the summertime. But with that said, I will say it is absolutely, of course, necessary to disinfect drinking water. That's one of the biggest advances in public health, I think, to date, to protect people from waterborne pathogens. This is absolutely necessary to get rid of bacteria, viruses, things like Cryptosporidium, Giardia, whatnot. We need to do that. We need to add disinfectants like chlorine and others to our water to make sure that it's safe. So there are things that can be done to kind of prevent this additional organic matter from mixing with those and to kind of decrease that. But that can be an issue with surface waters, is that you do have these disinfection byproducts that form after the fact. But the good news is that this type of contaminant that's formed within the distribution system, the drinking water distribution system, you can filter them out with a simple carbon filter after the fact.
And we want to get into much more detail on this. We're coming up on a short break. My guest is Tasha Stoiber, senior scientist with the Environmental Working Group. We're talking about the quality of drinking water, the various factors that can contribute to water quality. You can join our conversation. Give us a call, 800-222-9455. We'll be on this topic for another 15 minutes or so. That's 800-222-9455. 9455. And when we get back, we'll learn more about resources from the Environmental Working Group for learning more about water quality in your area. This is the 21st Show. Stay with us. It's the 21st Show. I'm Christine Herman. We're talking about the state of drinking water across Illinois. And Illinois has been known for really good drinking water. You can find several instances online where communities won national awards for its drinking water quality. That includes Champaign, Dietrich, Moline, and Danville. But there's also instances where the tap water might not be the best option for clean drinking water, and this could be for a variety of reasons. Too much of a certain chemical, too much of a certain element, for example. To learn more, we're joined by Tasha Stoiber. She's a senior scientist for the Environmental Working Group, a nonpartisan organization that looks to reform environmental and chemical and agricultural laws. We got a text message from Julie in Bettendorf, Iowa, and she wrote in to say, I live near Moline, Illinois, where they have excellent water quality, actually top-ranked nationally. So a lot of pride around our drinking water in certain parts of the state. If you have a question or comment about water quality in your area, join the conversation. We're at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Tasha, right before the break, I mentioned a resource that the Environmental Working Group has. It's a database on your website where you can search by zip code. Can you tell us more about what information people can find there and how they can use that just in their day-to-day lives?
Yes, the tap water database, ewg.org/tapwater.
And we'll include a link to that in our show notes so folks can find that.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Fantastic. Thank you. And so this is a free online database that anyone can use to search their drinking water quality. You can search by your zip code or you can search by state. And this is a national database that includes information for over 50,000 utilities in the U.S. It has information for every state. And this is drinking water monitoring information that we have collected from each state's either their environmental department or their health department. And we've compiled all this information in one place in a database that anyone can use to search to find what contaminants are in their drinking water. As I mentioned earlier, drinking water can vary quite a bit from location to location. So we recommend finding out about your drinking water. And this is a great way to do that.
And how might people use that information? Is it sort of like, okay, if I learn that these contaminants are in my water, I was poking around a little bit on the website and searching my zip code. It looked like there were recommendations. Okay, if I'm concerned about these contaminants, then maybe these are the filtration options I could consider investing in.
Yeah, so absolutely. That first step is finding out what contaminants might be in your drinking water. And again, we don't want to, alarm anyone. The risks for exposure to drinking water contaminants, these are things that are considered kind of over a lifetime. But the risks are different for different groups of people, depending on what stage of life you're in. So you might think about this a little bit differently, depending on that. But depending on the contaminants, you might think about a drinking water filter. As I mentioned before, sometimes all you need maybe is a countertop pitcher filter, an activated carbon pitcher filter. This type of filter can easily remove, as I mentioned before, disinfection byproducts, lead. So sometimes that's all you need. But if you live in an area that may have other types of contaminants that might be more difficult to remove, for example, if you live in an area that where your drinking water has something like nitrate or arsenic, You might want a more advanced filtration system such as reverse osmosis. These types of systems are a little bit more expensive than your typical carbon-based systems, but the prices have been coming down. And there are actually countertop versions of RO systems that are available now too. And some of these systems can't, are, like as I mentioned before, they aren't as expensive as they used to be. So finding out what contaminants, that's the first step, and then seeing which type of filter is rated to remove those contaminants, that will help guide you if you're looking to purchase a drinking water filter.
And when we look at the data for Illinois, it seems like some of the most popular types of contaminants are actually byproducts of the disinfection process, which you mentioned disinfection is a really important part of the waste water treatment process, but it can create certain chemical byproducts. What are the most important things people should know about those chemical byproducts?
Yeah, as I mentioned before, and I will say it again because it is really important, disinfecting our drinking water is absolutely necessary and is needed to remove things like bacteria, viruses, pathogens from our drinking water. So we absolutely need to do that. But in the and there are things that utilities can do to kind of mitigate the formation of those disinfection byproducts, including a filtration step prior to disinfection. Preventing nutrient runoff into drinking water sources, things like that can be used to reduce those. But as I mentioned before, the good news is if you do have disinfection byproducts in your drinking water, they can be easily removed with a simple carbon filter. And as I also mentioned earlier too, if you're in a different life stage, for example, people that may be pregnant or younger children, it's more important to reduce exposure to disinfection byproducts when you're in those different stages of life.
And I appreciate that context and also your comment about the levels, right? Like something at a super low level may not be a cause for concern. But there are some contaminants that have been found to be above the legal limit in water supply. Supplies across Illinois, and I believe arsenic was perhaps one of them. Can you talk about arsenic? And I'm confused as to how it's possible that these elements can sometimes get through drinking water systems and to people's tap above legal limits. But yeah, let's talk about arsenic. What do we know about this element?
Sure. So arsenic is a common contaminant in drinking water across the United States. This is going to be an issue largely with systems that, mostly with systems that rely on groundwater. Arsenic is a potent carcinogen, meaning that if you are exposed to arsenic in even in smaller amounts over a lifetime, it could increase the risk of cancer due to that exposure. So we really want that level of arsenic in our drinking water to be as low as possible. As I mentioned, it's smaller systems that rely on groundwater. Those are the systems that sometimes may have issues with arsenic. These levels in our drinking water, they can fluctuate. They're not static. Mm-hmm. For example, if there's been drought years, things like that, that can also make the levels of contaminants fluctuate in our drinking water. Sometimes systems don't rely on one source. They rely on several different sources. And perhaps those levels have fluctuated and you switch to a different source. So as I mentioned, the levels aren't static. They can fluctuate actually throughout the year, the levels of contaminants that you're actually seeing at the tap. And the reality is sometimes smaller systems, just compared to larger systems, they don't have that all of the resources that larger systems do to immediately address problems if problems do arise.
Let me take a moment to reintroduce my guests. This is the 21st Show. I'm Christine Herman. I'm speaking with Tasha Stoiber, a senior scientist for the Environmental Working Group. We're talking about drinking water quality and the various factors that contribute to it. We got a text message from Andy in Pecatonica, I hope I'm saying that correctly, saying that our water supplies are filled with PFAS and nitrates. Is that a concern? And what can be done about that? And PFAS, this is like the poly, it's considered the forever chemicals that are like persistent in water that don't break down over time. Can you comment on that?
Right. I think people are becoming more aware about the issue of PFAS in drinking water. And yes, they are known as the forever chemicals. A lot of people, I think, remember that name because they don't really break down in the environment. These are highly fluorinated industrial chemicals that are now used in a lot of consumer products. And it's this pervasive use in all of the different ways that has led to this contamination of drinking water. So this has been an issue for quite a while. We were happy to see that the EPA recently passed a federal regulation to regulate levels of PFAS in drinking water. That is still at the moment being negotiated, and we're still waiting to see when, because the dates may be extended or they may change, when that will go into effect.
So currently, water treatment facilities aren't testing for PFAS, but there's some movement to make it happen in the future, but it sounds like the timeline's unclear.
Well, I'll go back to one thing that you said a little bit earlier.
Sure.
So for testing, that depends on the state that you are in. Some states do have state level MCLs in place, and so it's been this patchwork for a while. But we're just waiting for the federal regulation that will kick in for all states. So some states do have regular testing, and there was just federal testing that that is happening right now, actually, where every state is testing for PFAS. So there are data that are coming in that are available. But it's just that federal regulation that was finalized, but is still being negotiated when that will go into effect. But absolutely, I think people are becoming more aware and realizing that they don't want PFAS in their drinking water. And it is pretty pervasive across the US. If they mentioned PFAS and nitrate.
Yeah, nitrates.
Both issues, I think, in drinking water in the state of Illinois. Nitrate, that's a little bit of a different pollutant in that it can be from agricultural runoff, things like fertilizer, whatnot. But it can be both an issue and groundwater and surface water. Sometimes higher population areas also have issues with nitrate. Nitrate is one of those stubborn contaminants that if you are looking for a filter to remove that one, reverse osmosis is a better filter to remove nitrate. PFAS can be removed with activated carbon. A filter that has multiple stages of carbon is going to be more effective, and reverse osmosis will also remove PFAS as well.
And Tasha, we're running out of time here, but I did want to include a quick note from my producers. In 2025, the Illinois EPA did adopt health-based groundwater quality standards for six different PFAS. So that's the situation in Illinois. But we'll have to leave the conversation there for today. Tasha Stoiber, thank you so much for joining us on the 21st Show. She's a senior scientist for the Environmental Working Group. We appreciate your time.
Thanks so much for having me.
And that's all the time we have for today. Coming up on tomorrow's show, millions of Illinoisans have arrest and conviction records, and those can affect their ability to get housing or a job. We'll talk with members of a Bloomington Normal group who are working to change that. Plus, a zoo in the Quad Cities is providing care and shelter to displaced animals from around the world. We'll talk about all of that next time on The 21st Show. The 21st Show is produced by Christine Hatfield, Harrison Malkin, and Jose Zepeda. Leili Nazarova is our associate producer, and our digital producer is Kulsum Khan. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. Thanks to the band Public Access for our theme music. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Christine Herman, in for Brian Mackey. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll talk with you again tomorrow.